I think they say that if you want to give yourself credibility, you just do something that, you know, just pretty much takes any shred of dignity that you had prior to coming up on the stage. One of the things I think I've heard, and I may have this wrong, is that when you do public speaking, you're speaking in front of a crowd, it's good to picture them naked. Well, I was more worried about you, so I thought, let me show a video of me as a pasty 10-year-old, shirtless, wearing short shorts and tube socks, boxing with winter gloves on. I thought that's what I would do. So that video was me and my best friend, Derek. So yes, it was Eric and Derek when I was growing up. And I was like the kid on the Goldbergs. If you guys ever watched the TV show The Goldbergs, the kid with the video camera, always going around making movies. Well, that was me. My parents had a video camera, probably one of the first ones that came out in the 80s, and I was constantly making movies with my friends. And so I've got loads and loads of VHS tapes with mildly amusing, mostly painfully awkward videos just like that and more. And that was like a little tease. If you want to see how the boxing match ended, you'll have to come rent the video from my home. So anyway, but when I was a kid, one of the things I wanted to do was I wanted to make movies. That was one of the dreams that I had. And like a lot of kids, I had other dreams. You know, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And at one point I thought, well, maybe I could be a rock star. You know, so I would love to be like up on the band here doing Foo Fighters songs. And so in eighth grade, I got an electric guitar and I took guitar lessons. And I did that for like 3 years. And then it was determined, I think by the guitar teacher, that Eric doesn't have what we call rhythm. And so I wasn't going to be a rock star. But then I grew up in Chicago, loved Michael Jordan, got one of the first pairs of Air Jordans, loved basketball. I thought maybe I could be a professional basketball player. And then it was determined that I can't do that. Then it was determined that I was white. And so that wasn't going to happen. And somewhere along the way, as I was beginning to dream about what I would do, I became fascinated with radio. Loved listening to the radio and the personalities on the radio. Now, many of you might know me as the guy here at Crosspoint who gets up here for a few minutes on Sunday mornings, rambles through announcements, makes a few jokes, then goes on my merry way. But for 20 plus years of really my adult life, all I've really done is radio. And so I went to college, I got my degree in broadcasting, started working my way up the ladder, worked in a lot of small market radio. So I did Kankakee, Illinois, and I did South Bend, Indiana, and I did Blacksburg, Virginia. But along the way, I kept working my way up as an on-air personality and also sometimes as a program director. And at one point, I found myself somehow, some way, at the world's largest Christian music radio network in the country that was nationwide and really worldwide on there. It was based in Northern California, so my family and I, we moved out to Northern California, and I went to go work for these two radio networks called K-Love and Air One. And if you listen to Christian radio at all and you live anywhere in the United States, there's pretty much a K-Love or Air One station there. So that's where I went to go work for. And I worked my way up the ladder there. So you have to understand, this is a multi-million dollar organization, top of the line, everything. At the time, it was like the who's who of who's working in Christian radio, and somehow I was there. But in 2009, I had worked my way up to being the co-host of the K-Love Morning Show, which is like the biggest Christian radio morning show in the world, and actually one of the biggest, most listened to morning shows in the entire world as well. I mean, 15 to 16 million people listen to K-Love each and every week. So it's more than any other, basically any other radio station you can think of were listening to this. And somehow I was on the morning show. So it was the Lisa and Eric morning show, and we did great, and it did well. And ratings were good. And then at one point, my co-host decided that she was going to quit to spend more time and be a full-time mom. And so I transitioned to our other radio network, Air One, and that station had millions and millions of people listening to it, and that was good, and that was going great, until it wasn't. Until I realized about 2 years ago that as much as this is all I ever wished for and would have dreamed for in radio, I was miserable. I found myself almost at odds with where I was working, that the things that were important to me weren't important to them. The things that they valued weren't the things that I valued, and the goals that I had weren't their goals. But then what? I felt stuck, because some of you may have been at this place in your life. You're like, well, I'm here, and if I don't do this, what am I going to do? So 2 years ago, I started a process on what I should do next. But what I found was so much more. I had no idea at the time, but what I was finding and beginning to find was this was less about what my job was and more about what my purpose is. So today you might be in high school or college and you're trying to figure out, what am I going to do with the rest of my life, or what am I going to major in? Or maybe you're beginning your career and you're going, okay, how am I going to work my way up to the ladder to get to where I want to be? It's quite possible you're in a job that you just do not like. It's miserable. Or maybe you're unemployed and you're sitting there thinking, this is not how I drew up life to be. I didn't plan to be at this place. Or maybe you're on the other side of that spectrum and things are going really well and you're in a job that you love and your things are well and you're living the Fisher's Indiana dream. But let me stress this. This is not about an occupation. Your purpose is not about an occupation. It's not about a job, and it's not about how much money or how little money you make. Because for some of you in this room, this is not a job thing. This is a life thing. Because you're sitting there saying, well, this is not how I drew my life up. This is not how I thought it was going to be. So whether it's failed relationships, loneliness, addictions, health problems, weight problems, some of us here have experienced pain I can't even comprehend. And the thing most of us have in common here is we find ourselves in a place at times going, now what? What am I going to do? I feel stuck. I don't want to be where I am right now, but I don't know where I'm supposed to be. And so maybe you're asking the question, what is my purpose? So if you indulge me over these next few minutes, I guess you have no choice. I guess you could get up and walk if you want to walk out. But over these next few minutes, I'd like to share with you a little bit about the journey I've been on over the last couple of years when it comes to purpose. And so there's four main areas that we're going to be going after this morning. So like many people, when you find yourself at a crossroads, okay, and so maybe you've been here before, of going, all right, what do I really want to do? So whether you're starting out or whether you're like midlife crisis or whatever it is, you're sitting there going, okay, what do I want to do? So like as a kid, I had all those things I look back to. Okay, so I'm not going to be a rock star. I'm not going to be a professional basketball player. I'm not going to be a movie producer. What could I do? I'm like, what are my transferable skills? Because I did radio for 20 years, so that's all my resume said. So I began to think, what are even my transferable skills? Is there a place going, man, the way you introduced that song, you would make a great brain surgeon. The call did not happen. Then I thought, Arby's. Arby's is the place for me because I could do the drive-through window, right? It's like broadcasting in some ways. But I started to look back at other parts of my life that I thought, okay, how what else did I like to do as a kid? And one of the things I loved to do was I loved to build. I loved to build things. Me and my friends were always taking extra plywood and 2x4s, and we were building forts. So I thought, maybe I could be a builder, which if you've heard any of my stories about how I am the least handiest person in the entire world, that I usually break more things than I fix, this might be laughable. But for me, at one point I thought, maybe I could be a builder. I could do some woodworking. I started looking literally into woodworking schools and classes. I went as far as going to Sears and buying myself a brand new miter saw. And there it is in the box. I bought that 2 years ago, and I took that picture on Friday. So it's still in the box, brand new, unused after 2 years. So that tells you where that tree went. Now, that box is right next to the box of the brand new elliptical. And that coincided with my dream to get into shape. So if you're wondering, between the two boxes, Eric's garage is where Eric's dreams go to die. So I had no idea what I was supposed to be doing if I wasn't going to be doing radio. Now, one thing that was happening to me during this time, and maybe it happened a lot throughout the course of my life and I didn't notice, but I had this heightened sense of awareness that this kept happening. I had people coming up to me, sharing their problems with me, coming to me, asking for advice, even saying like things like, hey, I heard you might be a good person to talk to. And so I found myself talking with people and encouraging people. A lot of it was coworkers of mine and work situations they didn't know how to handle, and they were coming to me, and they were coming back saying, what you said to me really helped me. And I thought, well, that's cool. That's really nice, to the point where I was having more of these conversations. And this is like 2 years ago. So this is right at the height of me going, like, what am I supposed to do? And so I said to my wife, is there a job I can do where I could almost be a consultant to people in dysfunctional work environments? Is there a job for that? I was trying to figure out if that's an actual job. Now, at the same time, during this time, we were doing a series at Crosspoint, and I forget the name of the series, but we were encouraged to take this thing called the Fivefold Ministries survey. And this is like one of those personality tests that you take, except it's a little bit different. And I always get the personality test mixed up. People are so good at knowing those things like, hey, I'm a high C or a low D, or I don't know what any of those things mean. I think I'm a big F. I'm not sure. That might have been my grades. I'm not sure. But anyway, I get these things mixed up. But the Fivefold Ministry Survey was a survey that helps assess your spiritual gifts. And basically, it says this is what you are hardwired for. Now, it's based on a book in the Bible, Ephesians 4, where God basically says, I give these four different roles, these four different positions to serve the body of Christ, to serve the church. And when we talk about the church, we're not talking about a building. We're talking about all of us. So newsflash, you fall into one of these categories, whether you believe it or not, because this is how God has hardwired you spiritually. And so you embody one of these five different areas. And so the five different areas were apostle, evangelist, pastor, prophet, and teacher. You take the test and you come back as one of those. Now, let me say this. You may be saying to yourself, wow, is that what I'm supposed to do for a living now? Because I was on monster.com the other day, and I did not see any apostle gigs. I'm looking for an apostle gig. Like, what's an out-of-work apostle supposed to do, or prophet? A prophet would actually probably see that coming. But anyway, I'm going off script. Anyway, this test helped you define or discover how God has hardwired you. So mine came back a pastor, which I scoffed at because I never thought of myself as a pastor. In case you're wondering, I'm not a pastor. It was funny. I was in Target a few months ago, and I had a family that I saw from Crosspoint, and they came up to me, and they said, hey, kids, look, it's Pastor Eric from Crosspoint. And I laugh so hard. Every time I hear someone say Pastor Eric, I can't help but I was giggling last night in bed at the thought of the name Pastor Eric, because when I think pastor, I think of the guy who's up on the stage giving the message. And yes, the irony of that is not lost on me right now. But this is not my gig, as you know that. I'm proving you this morning. This is not my gig, okay? But this is what it said a pastor is. Check this out under the fivefold survey. It says, a pastor is one who shepherds God's people, who cares for other with a tender heart, one who sees needs, provides comfort, encourages other. They can easily empathize with others, exhibit lots of patience with those in need. So I thought, okay, I can resonate with that because it's kind of speaking to what that thing I was feeling. And then it gives them like what they call secular examples, like outside of the church, if you will. And it gave examples like counselor, social worker, nurses, anywhere in the caregiving profession. So if you're a nurse, you're a social worker, you're in that field, chances are you embody the spiritual gifts of the pastor in this role, okay? And counselor really jumped out at me for a number of different reasons. One is, yeah, I kind of embodied that thing I was trying to figure out. Like when I was having these conversations, I guess in some ways, I was kind of counseling people. I didn't really realize it at the time. But the other reason it really resonated with me is that I benefited personally from counseling. There was a time in my life where my life was basically spinning out of control. Contrary to what people may think because you're the church guy or you're the Christian radio guy, I have a history, and I'm a human being, and I make mistakes all the time. But there was a time in my life where I felt like my life was out of control, and my priorities were out of whack, and it's a story for another day. But suffice to say is I benefited from seeing a Christian counselor for about a year. So that counselor word really, really resonated with me. And what I was discovering was that my purpose was not necessarily to be a counselor, although we'll come back to that. But my purpose was to embody the words, those spiritual gifts of the pastor, you know, specifically to care for other people's. So number one, when it comes to helping you determine your purpose, your personality, these things that God has hardwired you for, you may find that out from the fivefold survey, your past, so the past experiences I was having, okay, and your pain will help determine your purpose. You may already know what your purpose is. You may already have a good read on your personality and your makeup and what God has hardwired for you for. If not, I encourage you to take that fivefold survey. It is available in the Crosspoint app for you to do that this week. Your past experiences, whether it is work-related, or maybe it's volunteering, or it's your education, whatever, conversations you have with people, things that you've done, things you've learned or experienced in your life, your past helps shape your purpose. And here's one that's tough. Your pain, the loss of a job, the loss of a loved one, an addiction. a messed up relationship. Your pain has purpose. So whatever storms you are dealing with today or you've experienced in the past, just know that God can use that part of your life for his purpose, for not only your life, but your purpose in general. So one of the best-selling books of all times, and you may have read this, is Rick Warren's The Purpose-Driven Life. And the book's subtitle is, What on Earth Am I Here For? And some of you are saying that today, like specifically, like, what on earth am I here for this? But you may be saying that in a number of different ways. But if you've read the book, it famously begins with these four words. This is how the book begins. It's not about you. And for many of us, that's like, whoa, it's not about me. Of course it's about, I mean, we'll say it's not about me, but really it's about me. Because that's the way we feel sometimes, right? It goes on to say, the purpose of your life is far greater than your own personal fulfillment, your peace of mind, or even your happiness, which is, again, like, hey, I deserve to be happy. That's kind of a deal breaker there. But wait, there's even more. It's far greater than your family. And that might be a tough one for many of you in here, because you're going like, okay, I can prioritize a lot of things in my life. I can say, no, work is not the most important thing to me, but my family? You mean my purpose is more than my family? This is more than your family, your career, or even your wildest dreams or ambitions. Now, that's just crazy talk, right? That's just nuts, because that's so counter to everything in our culture. You think back to the scene in The Office of Andy. Hey, I'm going off to be famous. That's his plan, right? Because we live in a culture where it's, I got to get mine. I got to keep up with the Joneses. If this doesn't work out, well, I can move on to the next job, or I can move on to the next relationship, or I can move on to the next spouse. I need the next big thing. I need to win at all costs. And if I happen to step on some people along the way, so be it, but I had to get there. Kind of get the picture there. So Rick Warren finishes off this thought, says, if you want to know why you were placed on this planet, you must begin with God. You were born by his purpose and for his purpose. Your purpose is not about you. Your purpose is others focused. It's outside of you, and it's God-centered. Now, one of my favorite verses in the Bible is Jeremiah 29:11. And it's a verse that really ties in as a through line for this entire series that we're in called A Bright Future. And it really ties into what we're talking about today. It says, for I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans for welfare. Now, some people, you may have heard this version as plans to prosper you. So it says, plans to prosper you, to wealth for your welfare, and not for evil, to give you a future and a hope. Bright future, right? Now, there's a verse that speaks to purpose. God has plans for your life, plans to prosper you, not to harm you, give you hope in a future. Sometimes you think, well, God, what are you doing? I don't understand this. God, why would you do this? God has a plan for you to give you hope in a future and to prosper you. Now, that is awesome. Now, the next two verses in that, Jeremiah 29:12-13 says, then you will call upon me and come and pray to me, and I will hear you. God will hear you when you come to him. You will seek me and find me. Now, this is the most important part, when you seek me with all of your heart, okay? Here's the thing, when you're trying to learn your purpose, God's plan for your life, you need to seek him, and you need to seek him with all of your heart. The more I go on with life, anytime I have challenges in my life, anytime I'm trying to get answers to something, trying to figure something out, I keep coming back to this thing is that we have to seek God first, and we have to do it with all of our heart. So when it comes to your purpose, number two is your purpose is not about you. It's about others. It's from God. It's for God. So a year ago this weekend, so I'm talking about a two-year journey. So now going back a year. In fact, I think it was a year ago Friday, I quit my job doing the morning show of Air One. And unlike Andy, I didn't have dreams of like, hey, I'm quitting my job to go be famous. I quit my job and I'm going to, well, I don't know yet. And so some of you are sitting there going, well, that's either really bold or really stupid. And that's a conversation for another day in there. But here's the thing. So I can remember the next day after I quit. I can vividly remember this. I was walking down the steps of my home. And I was going through all the things that we think of when we think of our jobs. And oftentimes, especially for guys, our identities kind of get wrapped up in our jobs, but your identity might get wrapped up in something else. It might get wrapped up in your kids or your relationships or whatever it is. And that oftentimes dictates our thinking when it comes to the choices that we make. And so for me, I was thinking, well, I quit this really cool job that people on radio would kill for, and so I got to find another job so that other people think, well, he quit that job, but do you hear the job he's going to right now? It's even cooler, or it pays even more. That's why he did it. So in my mind, I was trying to figure out, how do I find a job that's cooler than that? And God struck me in my tracks, and this is what he said. And he's going to say it to you too. He said, Eric, what if I have something better for you? What if I have something better for you? You see, I was thinking this in terms of all these man-made criteria that we look at when it comes to the things that we do or the appearances that we want to have. It was finances. It was prestige. It was success. For you, it might be status. For you, it might be security. And again, this probably has nothing to do with your job. For you, it could be like, you know what? I'm never going to have a relationship like I had back with so-and-so. Or my life is never going to be as good as back when it was then. And God can be saying to you today, what if I have something better for you? We're so limited as to what we can see. Because we see things through our human eyes. We look at the horizon and we can only see so far. And God can see infinitely into eternity. And that's when we have to trust him to say, you know what, God, I want to believe you have something better. But at that point, I didn't. I didn't think he had anything that would be even the same, much less better. But as we go back to this, well, let me just say this too. God's definition of better is different than our definition of better. So keep that in mind. So as we go back to that verse in Jeremiah where it says, God has a plan for you, your life to prosper you. When you seek God with all of your heart, you'll find your plan. You'll find your purpose. And he will prosper you. But just like the word better, God's definition of prosper is going to be a lot different than our version of prosper. Now, it may fall in line. You could quit your job. And let me come back to this again. Today is not about quit your job, shave your head, become a monk, and sell all your possessions and, you know, whatever it is, do all these things. It's not that. I mean, it could be. I don't know. Let me know if people walk out of here saying, I'm going to Great Clips to shave my head, let me know. But it might not be that, okay? But God's definition of your life, it's going to be better. And so when it comes to prospering, God may come and say, you know what? Oh, yeah, you quit your job. I'm going to double your salary at the next place. He may do that, he may not, but just know this, that whatever he has for you, when you begin to follow his purpose for your life, it's going to be better. And God's definition of better is, well, it's better. There you go. So when it comes to your purpose, let's review here. Your personality, past, and pain help determine your purpose. Number two, your purpose is not about you. Here's another thing. Your purpose has an eternal perspective. So what does that mean? There's an urgency to this. There's a focus to this, that living out your purpose makes a difference in other people's lives. It's not just a tiny little thing. It makes a huge difference in people's lives. In fact, in some cases, the people that you encounter when you live out your purpose in their life, it can literally be a heaven and hell proposition in terms of their eternity, which sounds so dramatic. And you're like, oh, he went there, heaven and hell, wow. But it's the truth. One of my favorite authors and speakers is this guy by the name of Francis Chan, a great author and speaker. If you ever get a chance to read one of his books, I highly recommend it. He's got this clip on YouTube, which I'm going to blatantly rip off right now because I figure he does it so well. And I've already ripped off some Rick Warren. I'm ripping off some Francis Chan. If I get time, I'll see if I can rip off some Billy Graham before we're done and just complete the trifecta there of these types of things. So anyway, he's got this great analogy of a rope, a visual analogy, as how it relates to your life and eternity, okay? So let me just toss this out here. So this rope represents eternity in life, and Kurt's going to walk this back. Now picture this rope going on and on and on forever as opposed to getting knotted up and maybe falling halfway through there. But one of the most famous verses in the Bible And even if you've never read the Bible before, maybe you've seen a guy hold up a sign at a football game. It's John 3:16, right? For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish but have eternal life. So eternal life, that's what we're talking about this rope. So if you believe in Jesus, your life goes beyond those 80, 90 years that maybe you hoped to live here on earth, but you will spend eternity with God in heaven. That's the good news. If you haven't heard that, that's the real deal there. So picture this rope never ending. It's eternity, okay? It's continuous. Now, this little blip on the end, this is that 80, 90 years I was talking about, okay? Here's the deal. So many of us are wrapped up in this part of our life because it does maybe represent our jobs and it represents the retirement that we want to have and the vacations we want to go on and the houses that we want to live in, all of these things. And in and of itself, there's nothing wrong with those things. But if you live your life focused just on that, then you're missing out. Like, I want to take my kids to Disney World later this year. I'd love to be able to do that. We plan to do that. Disney World is a great place. I don't feel guilty about saying I want to go to Disney World in light of all this stuff. There's nothing wrong with that. But I've gotten to the point that if Disney World is the best thing that I can build into my wife, that I can build into my children, then I have completely blown it. If focusing on a Disney World life existence and experience is all I do, and I do it at the expense of eternity and the eternal difference of the rest of this rope, then really what have I accomplished? See, living with purpose is generally not going to be easier. Sorry to tell you that. You're going to sacrifice a lot, and I know for many in this room, you've experienced a lot of heartache. Because I know it. I see the prayer requests. I've been in some of your homes. I've been in the hospital rooms, and I've been at the funerals. And so I know there's people in this room who've experienced a lot that I can't even comprehend. As I mentioned before, God has a purpose for that pain. Check this out. This is what 2 Corinthians 4:17 tells us. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So when it says light and momentary troubles, that is not in any way, shape, or form meant to minimize any of the pain that you've experienced in your life. But if you commit your life to Jesus and his purpose for your life, the junk that you deal with here in these 80, 90 years in this part of your life is going to pale in comparison to the eternal glory that he has for you. Talk about a bright purpose, eternal glory. Check out that word. So how much of life are you living with purpose and with eternity in mind? Last point, number four, you need to pursue your purpose. So unlike the miter saw in my garage, it's kind of gone and just sat there. When God puts that purpose into your heart, you can't just buy it or dream it or think about it. You have to pursue it. You have to do it. My fivefold survey helped reveal to me that one of my purposes was to care for people. And the survey also gave me clarity that I did want to pursue counseling, not as my purpose, but more or less as a manifestation of that purpose. And unlike other areas of my life, when it came to counseling, I realized I had to go for it. So this is so unlike me. So 2 months within taking that survey, I was enrolled in school, working on a master's in counseling. Now people go, well, at some point, did you ever think about doing counseling? No. At some point, did you ever think about going to school, back to school? No way. I didn't know the first thing about doing this. But when God gave me that clarity and he put that purpose in my heart, I just didn't think about it. I just didn't dream it. I did it. So you got to do that. You got to pursue it. But here's the thing. There are going to be roadblocks that come your way. There's going to be things that get in your way as you go ahead and do this. You're going to have doubts in your mind. You're going to say things to yourself like, well, it's too late in life. I don't have enough money. I don't have time. When I get my life in order, I'll pursue that. And you got to push past those. You also have to push back the people in your life that may say, that's crazy. That's dumb. Why are you doing that? I mean, I had people in my life saying, Eric, do you realize what you're doing? When you're giving up this radio job and the salary that you're making and the platform that you have, do you realize what you're doing? That you are up here at the top of your game and you are now basically saying, I'm going to start over in every which way or form, at the bottom of the ladder, bottom salary. Do you understand that's what you're doing? You're going to have doubts. You're going to have naysayers. You're going to have difficulties. You're going to probably have them multiple times. Now, remember this. Remember the rope. Remember the eternal focus. Remember the rest of it and not this. This is too important. This is too valuable. You have to go for it. You have to push past those things, and you have to get past those roadblocks that are going to come your way. So finding your purpose, living your purpose, what does this look like? You really see it in the life of this lady by the name of Corey Selchert. So Corey had a little sister. Her name was Amy, and Amy, when she was an infant, developed spinal meningitis to the point that it completely ravaged her, both mentally and physically. I mean, just completely just diminished her mental capacity and her physical capacity to the point where Amy's family had to put her in a children's home where she could be taken care of full time. And one night while Amy was in this home, she was 11 years old. Now keep in mind, she was not on the same field and level as us in this room. She got out of bed and she opened up a door that was supposed to have been locked. And she walked outside into the darkness. And she walked into a pond. And she tragically drowned. And her sister, Corey, remembers at the time, laying in bed, just crying out to God, "God, where were you for my sister?" She just kept picturing her little sister not knowing what's going on. Her sister walking into that pond saying, "God, where are you to rescue me? Or someone come rescue me." And it was a pain that Corey Selchert dealt with until her adult years, until she heard someone say, "God can take your brokenness and he can redeem it." And so she began trusting God. She would go on into her adult life. She would get married. She would have 8 kids. She would find herself as a nurse, first as a hospice nurse. Later, she worked as a nurse in the maternity ward. And one of the things that kind of shocked and saddened her that she didn't realize what she was going into when she was going to work on that maternity ward is the amount of expectant parents. And let me just say this. This is a hard story to hear. I get that. I understand that. But there's hope in here, so stay with me. She says one of the things that shocked her about being that maternity nurse was that how many expectant parents walk into that hospital one way but come out almost the same way, meaning they come out empty-handed, that their baby passes away at birth. Their baby passes away maybe days or weeks into being born. She says she wasn't ready for that. She says, in fact, however, though, there were people in her maternity ward that she said she noticed that they couldn't deal with the pain either. That when other nurses found themselves saying, "You know what, and understandably so, I got to walk away from this because I can't deal with this pain. I can't deal with that hurt. I can't deal with that." Corey found herself drawn to these people. So when other people left the room, she was walking in. And she was there because she wanted to comfort them and encourage them. And she wanted to say to them, "Your brokenness can be redeemed." And so she began a ministry, a not-for-profit, to help parents who lost their babies. She was beginning to find her purpose. You see the through line here? See, her past, what she experienced with her sister, was leading to her purpose. Her past experience, even as a hospice nurse, made her uniquely qualified that on that maternity level that she was able to speak into people's lives in a different way than maybe another nurse could do that. But then she experienced the roadblocks that come. So after she finds this purpose and she's on her way, she herself gets sick. She finds herself bedridden for months and months and months, her health ravaged to the point where she had to give up her job. And again, she sat in bed and she cried out, "God, okay, now how are you going to redeem this? Now what?" Well, she did learn what God wanted her to do. 2012, Corey and her husband felt called to adopt babies that were born with conditions so serious and so severe that they would not live long. These were babies that the parents just couldn't stand the pain to care for. So Corey and her husband, Mark, made a decision that instead of letting these babies live this isolated, lonely existence of being in this hospital room all by themselves, left to die, she thought about her sister. She thought about the cries of those little ones that were probably similar to the cries of her sister that passed away, that they made a decision that they were going to hold these babies because nobody was there to hold them, and they were going to love these babies because nobody was there to love them, and they were going to adopt these babies, and they were going to bring these babies into their house. The first child they brought into their house is the nameless little girl. The parents didn't even name her. She was born without the right and left hemisphere of her brain. Doctors said this girl would live 2 weeks. They brought her in, and they loved this girl. Eight brothers and sisters, there was no shortage of people to hug this girl. And this girl went everywhere with them. Emma Lynn went everywhere with them. She lived 50 days. It's about 3 to 4 times longer than doctors said she would live. But Corey says this, this baby, this precious little girl, Emma Lynn, lived more in her 50 days than some people live in their entire life. Think about the purpose. I mean, think about the lessons her kids learned about sacrificial love and loving things that can't necessarily love you back and caring for others. You don't think the 50 days of that little girl's life was meaningful in the scope of eternity? Man, it was. They would go on to adopt 3 more kids. The third one was Charlie. That's a picture of Charlie up there. And they almost didn't adopt him because Corey was beginning to feel like, man, the pain that comes with this is very difficult. This is really hard to do. I don't know if we can do this anymore. And then her husband said to her, you can't stop because this is what you were meant to do. This is your purpose. Her purpose. Not necessarily to be a nurse or even an adoptive mom, but to love and comfort those who had no one to love or comfort them. That was her overarching purpose. That's Corey and Charlie on that screen and one of her daughters. They're loving him. Here's what she recently said about him. He will die. There's no changing that. But we can make a difference in how he lives. And the difference for Charlie is that he will be loved before he dies. My goodness. That's better than Disney World, right? Is that better than Disney World? In reality, it's way, way better. It is harder, but it is better. Corey said, people will hear our story and they will focus on all the sad aspects on it. But she says, what they're missing is the 95% of it that is total joy. Only a person living out their God-given purpose could say that. I mean, there is a lot of pain in there, but that is beautiful. When you look at this small part of the rope of your life, don't you want more of that story? When you look back at the end of your day, at the end of your week, at the end of your life, don't you want that type of meaningful experience for you, for others? Don't you want to look back on your life as you lived out your purpose and said, I did something that mattered, that had purpose? On the back of your connection card, there are some next steps here. And your next step might just be to come back next week and be part of a fun, wonderful Sunday, our game day teach-off. Bring a friend for that. That could be your next step. If you haven't taken this fivefold survey yet, find out what your God has hardwired you for from a spiritual gift standpoint. That could be your next step. Maybe it's to be others-focused. So take a look at these next steps. I encourage you to do that. Let's pray. God, thank you so much for the fact that you have designed each and every one of us for a purpose. God, we know that sometimes these purposes are built out of pain. And so, God, I pray that you just transform that pain and use it for something that's going to impact people for eternity. God, help us push back those roadblocks, those doubts, those naysayers, those excuses that we come up with not to pursue your purpose. Give us strength to do that, God. Help us to trust you when it comes to your purpose. Help us to live our lives with purpose. We just ask this in your name. Amen. So as we go through this series called A Bright Future, we know, and we talked about today, it's not always going to be easy. There are going to be challenges that come along the way. But as you trust God more and more with your life, that no matter what comes your way, you're able to say, it is well. So stand with me as the band plays a couple of songs for us this morning.